Hello, and welcome to this episode of the Well Women Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Laura. Today, I want to talk about something I see a lot in my practice, a concern I see a lot in my practice, and that's actually PCOS, or polycystic ovarian syndrome. And I want to talk about what the PCOS diagnosis even is and what it actually means, because I feel like there are some misconceptions out there about what exactly PCOS is, and that kind of leads to misconceptions about how it's actually treated and how it's best treated. So I actually want to go through that today. And so you can understand PCOS as a syndrome. So let's just kind of start basics with what it actually is. So polycystic ovarian syndrome, or PCOS, has actually been shown to occur in about 5 to 10% of women, and it's the most common cause of infertility. So a lot of women who are struggling to get pregnant, the underlying cause sometimes can be PCOS. And so from that perspective, it is a really great idea to get diagnosed as early as possible in your lifetime so that you don't have to wait till you actually can't get pregnant to have to address these symptoms, because oftentimes then it's too late or it takes much longer to get to a place of balance. So that's just something to be mindful of as well. PCOS is defined as a clinical syndrome. So the name really gives many misconceptions because it's polycystic ovarian syndrome. People assume that you actually have to have cysts on your ovaries to come up with a diagnosis of PCOS. However, that is actually not true. Typically, women will have cysts on their ovaries. Usually there's many 2 to 6 millimeter follicular cysts. Sometimes they're larger cysts. But the diagnosis of PCOS actually doesn't require the presence of cysts. And so that can be a really confusing point on its own. So let's just talk about what the risks are. First of all, polycystic ovarian syndrome, the reason why it's important to be diagnosed is it actually has several complications. So things like estrogen levels, when they're increased, actually increase the risk of endometrial hyperplasia, which is something that's a risk factor for endometrial cancer. So that's actually a big deal and something that we need to be looking for, and we need to know if it's something that we should be looking for. Another thing in PCOS is that androgen levels are often elevated as well. So androgens being our testosterone, this actually increases the risk of metabolic syndrome. And excuse my dog in the background, she's snoring. So if we can just ignore that for now, I will continue on. With androgen levels being elevated, this actually increases the risk of what's called metabolic syndrome. And so that's basically the compilation of obesity, dysregulated insulin, dysregulated blood sugar with that insulin, as well as cholesterol levels. And so hirsutism is another side effect of increased androgens, and that's things like excess hair. So you can get excess hair. A lot of women will notice on the face, on the back, down by their belly button, on their nipples. That can be a place where they have excess hair. Again, looking at hirsutism depends on what your ethnicity is, because if your background actually, you already have a lot of hair, then it might be harder to notice versus someone who's more fair skinned will definitely notice if they have excess hair growing. And so basically what happens is this hyperinsulin or this excess insulin can actually cause the increased production of androgens or testosterone. But we'll get into that because the relationship is quite complicated with that. Looking at the diagnostic criteria is really quite complex because it is a syndrome. The diagnostic criteria or to have a diagnosis of PCOS is really broad. And so in my actual practice, I see people that present with many different variants of PCOS. There are different types of PCOS, one type called lean PCOS and one type called obese PCOS. And so you can actually be normal weight or underweight and have your main concern be things like infertility, acne, irregular periods, that sort of thing. You can be overweight, not have acne, not have excess hair, and your main concerns are the weight. So I find that as a presentation, people really come with many different concerns. And so getting to the bottom of whether or not PCOS is at the core of those concerns is really the main goal in these patients. But when we're looking at the diagnostic criteria, it's quite interesting because it's not one of those things where we say, okay, this test says you have PCOS or you don't. When we look at the diagnostic criteria, we actually look at checking off a checklist, and we're looking at checking off two of three of these things. So looking at the criteria, first we start with number one is called ovulatory dysfunction causing menstrual irregularity. Number two, clinical or biochemical evidence of hyperandrogenism. And number three, polycystic ovaries. And so let's just get into that a little bit more. Number one is basically irregular periods. So ovulatory dysfunction usually causes irregular periods. So kind of in short, we ovulate every single month. And so when we do not ovulate, we're not ovulating regularly, that can actually mess up the cycles that we're going through, just put very simply. So we have irregular periods because we aren't ovulating properly or frequently. Number two is clinical or biochemical evidence of hyperandrogenism. What that means is clinical evidence is me looking at you and saying, okay, hyperandrogenism means acne, excess hair, maybe hair loss, like male pattern hair loss type of situation. That can be enough for a clinical diagnosis of hyperandrogenism. So this criteria, talks about clinical or biochemical. And so when we look at biochemical, we're looking at blood work that is indicating hyperandrogenism. And so usually that's through looking at testosterone levels, but it can also be done indirectly by looking at insulin levels, because if we do have a high fasting insulin, usually insulin will act on the ovary, cause the ovary to create more testosterone. And then as a result, we usually have more testosterone. So it kind of works in a whole pathway, but that would be considered biochemical evidence, whereas clinical is you're sitting in the office and I say, okay, you have acne and you have excess hair. That's already a check off. So the last criteria is polycystic ovaries. And so that's actually found on ultrasound. They would look at your ultrasound and they would say, okay, you have cysts on your ovaries. And lots of women have that. Just because you have cysts on your ovaries doesn't mean you have PCOS. So just to be clear, if your doctor does do an ultrasound and the findings are that you have cysts, don't automatically think that you have PCOS. However, if you have anything else that would suggest that PCOS could be there, it'd be a really good idea to investigate that and look at that further. So when we're looking at these three parts of the diagnostic criteria, the diagnosis actually only requires two of three. So now looking at this criteria, you can understand how you could actually not even have cysts on your ovaries and still have a diagnosis of polycystic ovarian syndrome. So the name can kind of be confusing, but at the end of the day, looking at this criteria, you can see it's really a broad spectrum of symptoms. So not everybody presents the same, which makes sense. And not everybody has the same symptoms and not everybody has the same goals with PCOS. So really, again, with everything else we do in naturopathic medicine, it's looking at getting to the root cause of whatever's going on. And so the root cause of PCOS is really actually quite unknown at this point. There is a genetic predisposition to have certain abnormal hormonal balances. And so that kind of contributes to the presentation of PCOS. But actually, there's really no known cause of what creates this imbalance. A lot of times family history is really big. So if your mom suffered from similar things, had troubles getting pregnant, had irregular periods, but was never formally diagnosed with PCOS, it might be something to look into, because PCOS is really a new diagnosis with the criteria changing and really getting into diagnosing people as part of a syndrome, as opposed to looking at people if you have it or you don't, and this is the guideline and it's very strict. So things have changed from that perspective. So if you have, like I said, family history, it actually might be a good idea to look into that being part of your picture in getting actually results. Or if you're struggling with infertility and you have no idea why, maybe that's a good idea to look into PCOS as part of your picture. And so testing for PCOS, I mean, we look at a variety of things. Because it's a syndrome, it can present with a lot of different things. And you don't want to discredit or kind of gloss over some things that can also contribute to period problems, infertility, that sort of thing. So you really need to do a thorough workup and make sure that everything else is ruled out before we start to rule in this. A few different things we can test are total serum testosterone, something called follicle stimulating hormone, that's FSH, prolactin, thyroid stimulating hormone, or TSH, doing a pelvic ultrasound or a transvaginal ultrasound is really a good way to rule that out. And then we can really see if you meet the diagnostic criteria. But other things to measure, we can look at cortisol levels, and we can look at DHEAS. So there's a lot of routes we can kind of go through in order to rule this in or rule this out as causes for, depending on what's showing up. Some women will have really irregular periods where they'll come every 2 months or every 6 weeks or every 6 months, but some women will actually present with PCOS because they've actually never had a period, and that can be for a variety of reasons that you can never have a period. So looking at blood pressure, looking at blood sugar, looking at lipids can also be really important. As I mentioned at the beginning, some risks and sequelae of polycystic ovarian syndrome do come with that metabolic syndrome profile. So making sure that we're treating and looking at those other risk factors, those cardiovascular risk factors, are really important as well. And so let's just talk about the connection between polycystic ovarian syndrome and insulin, because things kind of get a little bit complicated, and we think of hormones, we think of PCOS as something that impacts our periods, but we don't often think of insulin as something that impacts our periods or our hormone balance. So I really wanted to highlight that, and that's really the point of this podcast episode, is just to kind of give you an idea of all of the different factors that come into play when we're looking at a diagnosis of polycystic ovarian syndrome and looking at what that means. So insulin in general is a hormone made by the pancreas. So basically the food you eat is broken down into sugar during digestion. This sugar or glucose is absorbed in the blood after you eat. And then basically insulin comes along and helps that glucose enter cells so the body can use it as energy. That's kind of the basics. If there's not enough insulin in the body, or the body cannot use insulin, the sugar stays in the blood. And so under normal conditions, insulin rises after eating. It stimulates the liver and the muscles to take up the sugar and convert it to energy. Then this causes the blood sugar to fall and insulin falls. With normal insulin function, both your sugar and insulin will be normal on a fasting test, because what happens, like I just said, when you eat something, your blood sugar goes up, your insulin goes up, it helps to store the blood sugar, and then everything goes back to normal. And then you're fasting again. So things should be at their lowest when you're fasting. And when they come back up, that means that you've eaten or there's some dysfunction. And so with insulin resistance, or something that we see if you know someone who has diabetes, that's insulin resistance. So what can happen is your blood sugar can be normal, but your insulin is high. And this is because your pancreas has to make more and more insulin to get its message through. So basically, your body is saying, okay, we have blood sugar, we need insulin, but our cells aren't responding like they normally would to insulin. So as a result, your blood sugar is staying high. Your body is making more and more insulin, and the insulin is not doing what it's supposed to do. So then we have too much insulin, and too much insulin can actually cause inflammation, lead to weight gain. Like I mentioned, type 2 diabetes. Type 2 diabetes can lead to heart disease. And too much insulin has actually been shown to be one of the physiological drivers behind the pathophysiology of PCOS. And so this is a feature. Like I mentioned, PCOS can show up in people who are underweight, people who are normal weight, people who are overweight. However, insulin resistance tends to be a key feature in about 70 to 95% of people who have the overweight PCOS, and about 30 to 75%, so way much a wider range in people with lean PCOS, or people who are normal weight but aren't ovulating normally, might have excess androgens, that sort of thing. High insulin is not a symptom of PCOS, it's a driver of the condition because insulin itself actually impairs ovulation, causes the ovaries to make excess testosterone, and that can actually lead to all of the sequelae of symptoms that you have in terms of other imbalanced hormones, acne, excess hair, anxiety, that sort of thing. So, testing for insulin resistance, usually we look at fasting insulin, or you can do a 2-hour insulin glucose challenge test. You can also do something like HbA1c, which confirms diabetes. But by testing for insulin resistance, you can look at people who have an insulin problem and people who don't. Because, like you heard me just mention, insulin is an underlying driver of most PCOS, but it isn't an underlying driver of all PCOS. So it's so important that even if we get a diagnosis using two of those three criteria, when we're trying to figure out if you have PCOS, we still have to know what the underlying drivers are so that we can actually address them. Because if insulin is the main issue, then our major target is going to be insulin because we know that insulin acts on the ovaries, makes us make more testosterone, impairs ovulation, and insulin is at the core. But if insulin isn't at your core, then we can start looking at things like adrenal dysfunction, and hypothalamic amenorrhea, that can actually be diagnosed as PCOS by mistake, is actually a very, very different condition in which you don't have periods regularly, but it has more to do with the adrenal axis. So there's just a lot of things to consider when it comes to PCOS, and it is a very complex condition. And so, like I mentioned, people really present differently. Some patients, like I mentioned, have a main concern of infertility. Symptoms of PCOS usually begin during puberty and worsen over time. So it's going to be that excess growth of hair, body odor, acne is really common. You can have excess weight or trouble losing weight, irregular periods, or lack of a period. Like I said, up to half of women, I can't speak today, with PCOS, weight is actually normal. And some women are actually underweight. You may actually have body hair that grows in a male pattern. So like I mentioned, upper lip, chin, back, thumbs and toes, around the nipples, that sort of thing. Some women can experience temporal hair thinning or that kind of male pattern baldness. Other symptoms can be fatigue, low energy, sleep-related problems, mood swings, anxiety and depression, headaches, infertility. So it's really important to look into the causes of this because, again, I'm mentioning so many symptoms that can have to do with cortisol, that can have to do with your thyroid, that can have to do with iron, that can have to do with B12. So there's a lot of other things to rule out once we get into what the diagnosis is. But that is why it's so important to make sure that you're not just putting a blanket statement over any of your symptoms. You're really looking at everything as a whole, piecing it together and seeing what makes the most sense in a picture of your specific health. So having someone look at things and go through them piece by piece and then decide what we need to rule in and rule out to come to this conclusion. Do we need transvaginal ultrasounds? Do we need other blood work to rule out any other hormonal issues that we think are going on? Hormones are extremely complicated. So getting to the bottom of which hormone is actually out of whack and is possibly impacting the rest or more than one hormone can really be helpful in finding treatment. Another thing is, in women with PCOS who are diagnosed by their OBGYN or their medical doctor, the first line conventional treatment is birth control. And so I want to talk a little bit about this because, again, this is the first line treatment in conventional medicine. And it's one of the first line treatments in conventional medicine that I really disagree with. And there's a few different reasons, but one of the reasons is a lot of my patients will come in and say, hi, I have PCOS. My doctor put me on the birth control pill because they told me it will fix my period. And now that is absolutely not true. The birth control pill will not fix your period. That's just bottom line. You're being given synthetic hormones. And so they're going to do what those synthetic hormones are meant to do. And so as a result of being on those synthetic hormones, you might actually resume a regular cycle. You might actually get less acne or less hair growth. And that's not because your hormones are changing at all. That is literally because you're being given hormones at a specific dose and they're really covering up what's going on. But in some women, and actually in more of my PCOS patients than not, I find the birth control is actually gives them, the birth control pill gives them actually negative side effects. So they're not only saying that, no, it's actually not fixing my periods at all, but it's actually making me feel worse. It's actually giving me more anxiety, more depression, more weight gain, that sort of thing. And so looking at the research, actually, oral contraceptive pill use has been associated with changes in lipids. So I mentioned cholesterol being elevated or a risk factor of being elevated in PCOS, but the birth control pill has actually been shown to elevate bad lipids. So things like LDL and triglycerides, which are our negative cholesterol. So the other things is it can actually mess up that blood sugar balance. So I mentioned the relationship between glucose and insulin and PCOS and how important it is to modulate that insulin and reduce that fasting insulin. The birth control pill actually has been shown to increase insulin levels. So again, if you are one of those people, especially who has insulin that is high or dysregulated blood sugar at the core of your PCOS, the birth control pill is actually going to make things worse because not only is it increasing your lipids, which is a really bad thing for your cardiovascular risk, but it's actually elevating your insulin, and your insulin is already elevated. So at this point, it's actually going to make things worse and not better over the long term. So that's the other thing. They found that taking oral contraceptives for more than 6 months led to a significant increase in fasting insulin levels in non-diabetic patients. So again, these people didn't even have diabetes. In people who didn't have diabetes, the birth control pill increased their insulin levels. So if the birth control pill is increasing insulin levels in people who don't even have diabetes, think about what it's doing to people who already have dysregulations and elevations in their insulin. And so from a naturopathic perspective, when we're looking at PCOS, again, it really depends on what the underlying concerns are to how we treat and how we look at things. So as a naturopathic doctor, I'm always looking at things from a holistic perspective, which means I'm taking every single piece of the puzzle and I'm putting it together. So I could have four different patients with PCOS, but actually look at it very differently and treat it very differently. So if you come in and you are lean PCOS and you don't have problems with insulin regulation, but your periods are irregular because you aren't ovulating every month and you're having trouble getting pregnant, that's going to be a very different scenario than someone who comes in and they do have insulin dysregulation at the core. They are overweight and their main concern is their acne and weight gain. Those are going to be two very different approaches. All of my approaches always include different herbs and supplements at therapeutic doses. Sometimes acupuncture makes a lot of sense in terms of normalizing and regulating ovulation, especially when we have our main concern is irregular periods or our main concern is infertility. There's actually some pretty good research suggesting that acupuncture can help normalize and bring back ovulation and regulate irregular periods. Acupuncture is great for people going through infertility journeys, especially with things like IVF. Acupuncture is really, really helpful for. And so again, it really depends on the whole picture. But the point of this episode was basically to get you to understand what PCOS actually looks like, what a diagnosis actually means, and how the underlying causes can really change. I also wanted you to understand the connection between insulin and PCOS and how it's really not as simple as some people make it out to be. And that's why a diagnosis is oftentimes missed or overlooked. So it's a really great idea to make sure that you're being adequately evaluated if you think this is something that might be going on with you. And so as always, if you have any questions, feel free to reach out. You can find me on Instagram at Dr. Laura ND. You can send me an email, laura@laurapifer.com. And as always, if you're watching the video, you can always just comment below and I'll talk to you soon. Thanks.